something that's targeted here, not something that I typically focus on, but I decided to sort of take a one scene, demo scene, and see how close that talks to a number of different different parts of that sort of connect to it. In Hard to Smoke, the fellow describes how most of the people in the book, and he thinks that when he's in the intro, when he sees these pictures of the angels, he feels himself. I ask them, on Earth, the Iranian have been identified as him. Hazal and his man Rafael have two opinions of whether the most of the prophet is him or not. On the first source, by Yomer, Lot's father, Lot of Panai, having the children that he should have been terrified, Tacham Allah has spoken to Moshe. When Moshe wanted to see God's presence after Maima Hasinai, and Tarshish Kisika, Tarshish says to Moshe the following, when I wanted you to see me, when I wanted to reveal myself, you weren't interested. Afsa, Shachar, 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 if you want it, I'm not interested. And the Gemara says, it's Yigad Rech Shmuel Ben Achmanion, Yonathan, the Amrach Shmuel Ben Achmanion, Yonathan, it's Tar Shalot, the Zohar, the Shalot, it's Tar Vayachem, the Shachanah, the Zohar, the Pasha, the Tom. The incarnate mode that Moshe received after Maimon Har Sinai, that was a reward for having shown an appropriate humility and concealing himself when God appeared. What the tension I think that's expressed in the Gemara Brachos is the question of God, which is to be concealed or not, which is to be concealed. And I think this places up not only in direct contact with God, but even in terms of the interpretation of Torah. Sometimes the function of Torah Chazal is to reveal the secrets of Torah, and sometimes it's to conceal. The Gemara in the Gil of Asim Amid Aleph speaks about the translation, the Targum, which was written or made by Yonatan Ben Uziel, and the Gemara says that after Yonatan Ben Uziel composed the Targum to Medina, with a box called came out of heaven and said, Mihu Zeh Shehiva Sarai Lebnei Adam, who has revealed my secrets to mankind. Yonatan Ben Uziel really defensive that he did it not his own cover, not his family's cover, but for tonight. Similarly, in this week's parashah, we have a well-known pasuk when Moshe Rabbeinu asks for God, asks God what his name is, what he tells his people, says, Zeshimi le'olam zezetu le'dor. The Gemara in Kedushin, that by Aleph Amid Aleph, the second source, Amar Rav Hashana Amar Yochanan Shein Ben Rav Osir, Chacham and Moshe Mosheh, Tamidei Hamach, Hashabuah, Ha'ani Lechamayim Hashabuah. The proper pronunciation of the Shein HaMakorah, the Tetragrammaton, is transmitted by the Chacham and Kibbutz students once a week a cycle or twice a week a cycle, very infrequently. Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, Mishtava Tamar Amar Hamach, Hashabuah. The more likely correct version of this tradition is how frequently they used to translate it, obviously they don't possess it anymore, with only one, the less frequent transmission, the Siv Yeshimi Le'olam Le'alim Siv. The word Le'olam is written across the God, and therefore instead of reading it, this is my name forever, for eternity, we read it, this is my name to be concealed. The Zed Yitzri Le'dor Dor, and God has a way that his name is written, and a way that it's not pronounced in that fashion, and there is a way that it's supposed to be pronounced. The Gemara continues, Rava Sava Namidushay Vesheva, Rava was going to teach this in his public Russian. Amar Lev Misaba, an elder, called Rava of the Alein Sif. He spoke to concealing. And finally, Ravina Rami, Sif Zeh Shemi, Sif Zeh Zeh. One place that is said that this is God's name, and Zeh Zeh, this is how I am mentioned. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Shani Nitzavani 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 the Yud Hey the Nitzav Aleph Dalet. In fact, the most common phrase here is Tanakh. I ask most of my students when I teach this, what is the most common phrase here? And they sort of scratch around, but in fact, it's the same from the Torah. It's written with the Nitzav Okay. It's actually pronounced with Aleph Dalet. And really, in fact, if you look like every phrase here, many senses of Tanakh. The way they frequently do it is they sent the letters of the script, they put in the pseudos of the prey underneath those letters, and the same thing is done standing with the chant on the Torah. If you look at the spot, the pseudos under the chant on the Torah, it's not in the pseudos of however you would pronounce the chant on the Torah, it's in the pseudos of the same objects. So clearly there is a tension between revealing things and concealing things. And sometimes it's supposed to reveal and sometimes it's supposed to conceal. I wanted to focus on one particular, not so much in the title, but it's connected to the culture. One particular concealed issue, and we'll see why later, why Stephen would bring something that's concealed. The concealment of the identity of a certain individual in the Torah, the approaches of Jesus. The Gemara, both the Babi and the Shammai, have a little bit of discussion as to exactly what the Mekoshes Eishim did, that's really found in Parshat Shlach, and who exactly was the Mekoshes Eishim. I'll come back to more about that later. It's relevant to this because the term Mekoshes is really only found three times in the map, at least with this being found in three places in the map. So twice in this Parshat, when Moshe comes to Paro and asks him to see the Jews, so Paro says, you know, obviously they're lazy, they have too much time on their hands, therefore they obviously have to gather the seven as well. Maybe I'll see the other two, the two on the seven, and later the Jewish people describe as going out and they change past the seven. The Parsha Shlach, though, is by Yehuda Yisrael on the broad, by Yisrael Yisrael, the Koshesh Eishin, the Yom HaShabbat, by Yahweh Yisrael, the Moshe Yisrael, the Koshesh Eishin, and Moshe Yisrael, the Yisrael, the Yisrael. So we have somebody who described as the Koshesh Eishin. We'll come back to that in a moment. The other third place in Tanakh is with Eliyahu and Yisrael Manah, in Malachim, near the end of Malachim Aleph, where he's told to go to a certain place, and he describes an Amanah, who is the Koshesh Eishin. The same thing. The question is, what exactly is what malacha do the Koshesh Eishin violate? The Bavli in Shabbos, the Bavli of the day, the third source on the sheet, cites three opinions. I'm not going to do that much more. The Koshesh, Mati Abba Amos, is the Sarabi. This malacha was the Hosa, or Ahavar, and Dalar Amos, is the Sarabi. The focus was to carry it from the Sarabi to the Sarabi. From the Shikhayachot to the Sarab, and that was the Malacha that he violated. The Masnisa Kama, and a Bryce that was called Polish Kama. The simple meaning of Polish is that he detached the, he carried the good four armas in the Sarab. Masnisa Kama Polish Kama. In the Mishnah it's taught that he cut the wood from the ground, he detached it from the ground. That's the simple meaning, that's the only meaning of Polish, and probably refers to the Malacha Koser. There is one opinion in the Yisrael that Cholish is not a malacha koser. In this context, Cholish is a malacha of cholish, of flour. Cholish means anything that you put to the ground with. If you remove things that are attached to the ground, not with the purpose of using it, not because you want the material that you're harvesting, but simply to clean up the ground. So that is called a cholish. Some say it's cholish. It's one of the two. So the Acha B'Rabbi Yaakov Omer Ma'ameha. Is actually bundling things together. And the fifth of the other, the fourth of the other malachas is after you've harvested the grain, you take the grain from wherever it is in the field and you gather it together in bundles, you make it into homarim or perhaps into one large pile, and that is the av malacha of Muhammad. Now, this is an aside, the Gemara wants to know why this is important. It's very nice, where you find the perfect pasuk, but why is it significant? What's the halachic relevance? You might not familiar. The Gemara says, "What's the Rav?" The Amar Rav, "Masafim Megillah Stone Veila Tzia." That we found a hidden scroll in a tzia. Has the pasuk say, "Isi Ben Yehuda Omer Avos Malachas Avon Pasul Acha Ve'Elo Chayim Ela Acha." Isi Ben Yehuda says that there are 39 malachas and you only chayim one. And the simple meaning of Isi Ben Yehuda's statement is that even though there are 39 malachas within Shabbos, if you do any of them, or multiple ones of them, you only tie up one chatas. Just as when it comes to certain other Yisroelim, even if you do the Yisroelim multiple times, so if you eat Kalev, it's a Kedayis of Kalev, and you still don't know, and you eat another Kedayis of Kalev, and another Kedayis of Kalev, you only bring one carbon chatas, it's considered one Kedayis. But by the same token, Yisroelim Yehuda seems to be saying that if you violate different malachas of Shabbos, that there's no Kedayis of malachas of Shabbos, and you only tie up one carbon for your Avera. Then the Gemara says, Kisulo, is that possible? That you only need to tie it one chakras? Hatnan, avos malachas, avon chakarachas, rabin and bam, miyana lamalim. If you wanted to know, why does the Mishnah have to tell us that it's 39? You can count. You take the Mishnah, count malachas after malachas. Lo and behold, you get to 39. So the Omer of Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said to explain the Mishnah, Shema sami kula behananachas, tie it malachas to achas. Rabbi Yochanan says the reason why the Mishnah not only lists the 39 malachas, but actually tells you, and the Mishnah tells you that there are 39, is to tell you that the maximum number of chatas is in tithes, in forgetting, got all of the Shabbos, the maximum Hatzot would be high would be 39. If you get every single Avalah and violate the Shabbos on Shabbos, you'd have to bring a Karban. So if you violate an Avalah and a subcategory, hold on, you don't bring two Hatzot. So the maximum number of Hatzot is 39. So how could you see them do the same? So the Gemara says, Eina Chayav Alach. Each of the Yehuda had a tradition that of the 39 Malachas, one of them did not have a Chayav. But he doesn't identify which one. So the Gemara said that Rabbi Yehuda Pshuta Leidem Hamad Yichai, Rabbi Yehuda sort of was cautious that Ma'adar Adalan Karabin took a real Malacha, it's not the one pseudo Malacha. And the other Malayim also, whatever Malacha they took, whether it was Tolach, Tolach, whether it was Ma'amir, so they were certain that that particular Malacha, you were Chayav Chayav. So that would not be one quasi Malacha in the 39 Malachas of Pshuta Ben Yehuda. The Gemara has presented essentially three opinions as to what the Mekoshet was. What exactly was driving this discussion? Why do they identify as this Malacha? So the two grounds on which to assume that they were defining as Mekoshet. One was an test on linguistic grounds, what the word Mekoshet means. And the second may have been that they were driven by another consideration, is that if they were going to execute the Mekoshet, then presumably he had to have been warned not to have done what he did. Now, Jews were told no chasef on Malacha, but the Torah doesn't define what exactly is Malacha. Some of them say that Chazal would have to define how you might give the others Malacha. And they started with the template Mishnah. But the question is, how could you kill the Mekoshet if he wasn't in fact one not to do a specific form of Malacha? So when you look at the Malacha that were chosen here, the first one was Ma'adar Da'alam and Shishalat. There are only a handful of Malacha that are singled out by the Torah to be mentioned specifically as Malacha of Shabbos. And one of them, which means that these people should make right down in Parsha Shabbos, Al Yetzei Ishin Tomo Bayon HaShvi'i, that may be referred to as Tum, but Chazal understood that, no, read Al Yetzei Ishin Tomo Bayon HaShvi'i, Al Al Yotzi Ishin Tomo Bayon HaShvi'i, and that refers to the prohibition out of going out on Shabbos, but of carrying something out on Shabbos, and the Malacha of Hosea is the same Malacha of Havar Adal Amos Mishikarabim. We say that every four Amos Mishikarabim is its own eclipse, and we take it from the three Dal Amos outside the Dal Amos to the most near to the same. So, for the first opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, so the Moshe can be identified as Madri Dal Amos Mishikarabim, because that's the beginning. By doing so, we can hire the person. We could assume at least that he's high priest. And the only reason that they were thrown in jail was because they didn't know which one of these that he was supposed to give it. Now the second approach, which is to say Tolei Chav, I'm assuming it's the first one of Malachas Tolei. So this also fits with one of the Malachas that's mentioned in Tolei. In Parshas Kisita, it's a Machlokas HaKanoim, whether this is the first of Shia or Shabbos, but certainly the Kisita from this or the first of Shabbos, Sheshes Shamin Tavod, Uvayom HaShvi'i Kisot, Vecharishim HaKotir Kisot. The two Malachas which are singled out there are plowing and harvesting. So if you say that the Mekoshet is in fact Tolei, so you fit into Vecharishim. Now, the last Malacha, the last one of Ma'amer, which is gathering them together and bundling them, that is perhaps the one that has the least basis, at least in terms of previous warning, unless you want to infer from the passage of the month that on the Shabbos, you have to end it on the coast. They went out to gather the month and almost so. But when it was presented, because they weren't warned so much about not gathering the money, they were just told that there wasn't going to be any money, so there was no point in going out. But once you perhaps find a point in that, you have to end it on your coat, that in fact gathering the money was considered a malacha. Now, that's from the grounds, that's from the perspective of ein onshin ela in te masu, the Torah doesn't punish unless the person was warned. From the perspective of language, so coming back to this parsha, so the Kosh Shulahem Heaven would perhaps provide the best basis for the third opinion, maybe perhaps the second opinion as well. And when you look at the word Heni Elohim Kosh Shulahem Heaven, I think the simple interpretation is that Rashi gives, Yasu, they should gather together with heaven. If you look in the Targum actually translates to Yavi Wom. Those who've learned the Tarakhira and Shabbos know that the two of the things that are mentioned in the Mishnah are Kashi Zavaha. The question is exactly what is their identity, Kashi, what is their identity, Zavaha. But it's clear that Zavaha, there are two kinds of things that are related to the chaff, and they're used as food, obviously one food. So in this, the simple explanation of the Zavaha, and Zavaha means that when you harvest grain by cutting it from the ground, there are two parts of the stalk that can still be used. There's the part that's attached that have the heat attached to it, that have to be both pressed and winter dust and done whatever else to let the back cast. And there's also these are also the salts that are left on the ground that have to be pulled out. So it would appear that the job of one would appear to me that it to pull those salts out. So at least according to Rashi's explanation of close to Elohim Ha'avim, so that would refer to Asifa, that would be the Malacha of Ma'ane. So the simple meaning of the word is associated with the same, the person is gathering the wood. So it's wood that has been attached from the ground by whatever means, branches, that are lying on the ground, and you simply go and you collect them. The second opinion also could fall on the basis of that. It's not really, not stretching too much to the close to Elohim Ha'avim, they should cut to themselves, they should harvest the flesh. So those are the three opinions that I'm calling in the Bible. And this is the fourth source, has a brief discussion in Sanhedrin. Has a brief discussion in Sanhedrin, and all they add to the picture is the following question. Here the Gan Dasam Hoshish Vishim Magatai, Vishim Polish or Vishim Kosha? Is it either the Polish or Kosha? The Yisrael's questions are a little strange, I'm not going to discuss them extensively, but the obvious question that comes to mind is what's the difference Polish is between Polish and Kosha. Kosha means you cut with a flea, and Polish means that you rip it out of the ground with the roots. So Polish is generally considered a kola of Kosha. The question is what difference does it make, and why do Yisrael care? So some understood that Polish, as I mentioned earlier, doesn't refer to actually harvesting, but it refers to the Malacha of Polish, if your goal is not to actually use the grain, but simply to make the karka clean, to clean up the ground. And some say that, oh, that the issue has nothing to do with the Malacha of Polish, but when you give Hasra, when I give Hasra to the person, what are you supposed to give Hasra for? Some have shown and hold that when you give Hasra, that you're supposed to give Hasra either for the Av Malacha or for the Kola, depending on what the person is doing. If the person is doing Kosher, you have to tell him you're doing Kosher. And if the person is doing Kola, you're really supposed to tell him not that he's doing Kosher. If the Av Malacha, you can get that you're actually doing Kola, which is the Kola of Kosher. So be that as it may, the Yisrael presents, reaches the conclusion that in fact it is Kola. And Kola aids him in the heart. Okay. So those are the basic opinions of what Makosha is. Now, what I said until now is that one of the concerns that Ned animated the Amorayim in trying to determine the identity of the Malach of Makosha was the question of Ein Onshin Ela Inshei Matir. This question actually may be dependent upon another issue which is raised by the Gemara in Sanhedrin with regards to the general nature of Makosha's Eitzim, whether or not he was punished based upon normal grounds or when he was punished as a Hara'ah Shah. In one statement in Sanhedrin, the Gemara records a debate between Rabbi Nathaniel, Mishnah, which is a debate between Rabbi Nathaniel Chachamim, about how you understand the word in fact, the Chachamim when you fought on my head. When two people fought, and one of them is injured in the fight, and he's lying in bed, so if he encouraged that they do not put the Chachamim on the front door, then once he's gotten better, he needs Chachamim Machem. The Machem, the one who had smote him, is now with him. So one day I understood that this is a source for that you can throw in the jail until you find out whether the guy gets out of the hospital and whether he survives. And the other seems to have understood it differently. And the Gemara says that if you come on my head on the Sunday belt for a different din, where do you learn the notion that you might throw a person in jail? Presumably if you don't throw a guy in jail, he's going to run away. So first the Gemara suggests that the Tanya who uses Makosha, use him as a source of Makosha. So the Gemara says Makosha is not a good proof, because Makosha is the case where you know you're going to kill the guy, you knew he was hiding, so they just say, no, what did that sound like? Who says that in a situation where you don't know what you're going to ask the person? You don't know whether the person he injured is going to die or not, but you still have to lock him up in jail. Then the Gemara says, you turn to Megade, the person who blasphemed, the Tarkus Amor. And the Megade, there was no warning about Megade before. And so they didn't know for sure, because I'll observe that the Magande didn't know what his punishment was. And the Koshish, they knew he was high Issa, more sure that they didn't know what the Jewish woman was punishment was supposed to receive. So the Gemara says that the Chachamim don't know from the Magande because it was Hara'ah Shah. But the Koshish would in fact have been a valid source for imprisoning someone, if only for the fact that it's not parallel to the person who strikes someone else. Because in the Koshish, they knew this high Issa, whereas somebody strikes a friend and a friend and another person, and that person is his life is threatened, you don't know whether he's going to be tied loose or not. That's what the Gemara says about buying stuff in the day. However, the Gemara on Daf Ten today is talking about an offense of even the Chachamim, whether or not, if you don't warn the person for what death penalty they're going to get, whether or not you can execute them. What if you go to a person and say, you mean the Chal Shabbos, we're going to take him to base and we're going to execute him. You don't tell him that he's going to get skeeva. You don't tell him that he's going to get skeeva. So what about in that situation? So then he just says the same. So the person of Chachamim said he's saying, Chachamim points to Mikoshe, just an example, by Mikoshe, they imprisoned the person, and they killed him, they executed him subsequently, yet they hadn't warned him which form of use that he was going to get. Obviously, they hadn't told him it's useful, because nobody knew it. Most of them didn't know. Certainly, the most certain association of him did not know what form of death penalty he was going to receive. And Rabbi Yehuda's response to that is that Mikoshe is a harasha. In fact, the status of Mikoshe, whether or not he was punished in an ordinary fashion and deserved it in the fullest sense, or whether or not it's a rasha, is actually a machlokes in the Gemara, in which case it's possible, even if the malacha of Mikoshe wasn't mentioned previously in the Torah, assuming for the moment, let's say, in the Amer, even if you don't find that the man, the mention of gathering by the man is sufficient warning, nonetheless, the killing of Mikoshe may have been a rasha, and perhaps the principle, the notion of Inshin Matirin, is also not valid. That's as far as what was in the Malacha of Mikoshe. The second step was, who was in the country? I'll probably repeat this, but I think when one studies Medrash Chazal, one observes that the analog in the natural world, that nature of course of action, is true of Chazal as well. Unnamed individuals in Tanakh, always some have trouble with Chazal. People had to have names. They had to identify them in some form of fashion. The Gemara in Shabbos, the third source, the second paragraph on the sheet, the Gemara in Shabbos continuing records the following discussion. Tell me Rabbana, Mikoshe get Flacha. The Mikoshe is in fact Flacha. The Fenu Omer, by Yubnei Yisrael, by Mivar, by Yitzhu, Ish, Mikoshe, Yitzhu, Yom HaShabbos, by Yubnei Yisrael, Tom Yivar, they were in the desert. The Lahalam Omer, when Papa's daughter came to Moshe Rabbeinu and pleaded their case, they said, Avinu, make Tom Yivar. The Malahalam Slachad, Achran Slachad, the Rebbe Yisrael. And Yubnei said that Slachad was the Mikoshe Shasis. Omer Le Rabbi Yubnei Ben Beseira. Yubnei Ben Beseira responded, Akiva, you are in trouble, one way or the other. In Kippurasa, if you're right, in fact, that what Slacha did was a halachah. Hatorah Kisasa, Racha Medalasa. The Torah chose to conceal his identity, and here you go and you reveal it. If you can love, and if you're wrong, Hatamot Malshinah, Hatamot Malshinah, then you're a Malshin. He told Malshinah about it. He didn't do such a thing. Now, you would think that the discussion in the Gemara would in fact stop now. Right? Here, Rabbi Akiva makes a suggestion that he didn't say, maybe he couldn't help me, he's done a horrible thing. And yet immediately, the Gemara turns around and says, the Gemara first asks, was it Zer Shabbat? So he says that, you know, didn't say that it wasn't Zer Shabbat. And then the Gemara, and the way it's presented, it's not part of the Braisa, but rather it's Zibra HaGemara, and then they hate Ahava. So who was he? Okay, so if Rabbi Akiva's wrong, then who in fact was Shabbat? A little, you thought that. Enough! Okay, or even Messiah has put a lid on the discussion, it's over. Instead, I want to know it. Who did? Okay, so not that. Who really was he? And Hefan Hava, maybe Akiva Hava, he was one of the Akiva. He was one of the people who, after the fate of the Rajan, so decided to, they were going to do their form of Tshuva, they ignored Moshe Rabbeinu's warning, and they went out to fight against Nan and the Middle Coast. That was all he would make fun of. He wasn't part of the only thing we know for sure is that Slachad wasn't one of the Adat Torah. But that's what the Gemara said. In fact, when you look at the Sifrei, this passage in the Bible seems to be a continuation. They suggest, after everything the Sifrei is saying, how can we even talk about it, so the Sifrei itself suggests, well, he was from the Mount Zion. No, Zer Shabbat was only, he doesn't have this particular of Zer Shabbat. He didn't have Bamidbar, Midbar. Or Hebrew and Mitzera did not have Zer Shabbat or Bamidbar, Bamidbar. And therefore, he's coming to make sense. Now, the Gemara's assumption is called Zer Shabbat. How did Zer Shabbat Bar Mitzvah, obviously, then the Torah was trying to tell you that. If you have a Torah Shabbat pet, which is attempting, you know, to tell you that, in fact, the identity of Shabbat was the identity of the Torah Shabbat was Shabbat. But if it doesn't have a Zerah Shabbat, so then it's basically independent exegesis, in which case, you know, Yehuda and the Zerah felt it should have been concealed. So here again, you have this tension between that Yehuda and the Zerah of the Akiva as to what our function is. Are we supposed to be revealing the identity of the Torah, or are we supposed to be essentially covering it up? But at the same time, you can ask about Yehuda and the Zerah's warning, you can see that the Gemara is itching to find out. Okay, so it's other students. Then I'm interested in the part that Rabbi Akiva should have covered it up. The only one to know about is if he's wrong. If he's wrong, okay, so if the Shabbat isn't in the kosher, what exactly did Shabbat do? Okay, so that's where the Gemara really leads us. They cite one other example where Rabbi Akiva does the same thing, where in the story of the Salas, the Gemara continues, Hayotze b'adabar at Omer Simli v'yikah Hashem bam v'yilach l'mamei chach Aaron Stara. That God got angry at Moshe and Miriam, that's clear. The Torah doesn't say that anything happened to Aaron. So Rabbi Akiva says that when it says v'yikah Hashem bam v'yilach, the gift of Miriam became in the Salas, Aaron became the Torah as well. This is Rabbi Akiva. To be that as it may, one can at least see that there really is this very strong tension between the Megala and the Chaser. I think the general tendency of Chazal is that it's the Megala, not the Chaser, but clearly there's a problem for both. The ending of Acts Gemara in Megillah asked if Yonasan of Aziel had done the targum of Nevi'im, so he wanted to go do the targum of Tzuvim, and Abaskar came out and said, enough. And the Gemara explains the reason why the Abaskar came out is because the Nevi'im, Tzuvim, particularly the case of Daniel at the end, contains the secrets of the case, Mashiach, and that wasn't supposed to be revealed. There are things that are meant to be publicly taught, and there are things that are meant to be privately taught. It's something that's reflected, you know, in different ways in the Halakha, the Gemara in Menachos, speaking about the Kiva from the Torah, and now, moving on to something of a more clearly agadic nature, there are a couple of phenomena in Agadat Chazal which sort of reflect this idea of trying to uncover, trying to reveal that which is concealed. In terms of the identities of people that are found in various passages in Tanakh, specifically even in the Torah, there are two different phenomena I refer to in this context. One, which one of my professors wants to do a conservation of personality theory, where you get Chazal, and this comes in two varieties. One is that Chazal are always identifying that one particular figure is the same as another particular figure, that Pinchas Eliyahu, that's the best example comes from the Mavon and Bilam being connected. You find a lot of Agadas which try to take two individuals who, at least if you two things that are not living at the same time, not connected to each other, and tie them together. That's one phenomenon. I'm not going to really talk about that issue. We can obviously have a particular agenda or goal in doing so. The second kind of that conserving personality is when you have a lot of these unnamed personalities that Chazal always identify as the same person. Now, I'll talk about specifics in a moment, but one of the classic examples comes up in this entire discussion on the Nabiya. I'll refer to that in a moment. That's one type. The second thing that always seems to preoccupy Chazal are the disappearing people. This one in particular, Rashi, is very almost always exclusive in his Perek HaChumash, always figuring out where the people disappear from. One of the more famous examples is Besuel, where you have a conversation with Eved Avraham usually speak to the Eliezer and Rabbanan Besuel about making a shidduch with this and Yitzchak, and then you go to the end of the parsha and all of a sudden Besuel disappears. And Rashi quotes a very famous Medrash Chazal about that. Besuel is a higher, so how you learn to la'akev, you bomb out of the Yitzchak. So you have these concealed figures, which is not a personality, it's always just a Chazal. To give several examples, more concrete, I want to give several examples, but I want to practice what we're doing two general terms, some of which is a little bit controversial, but they're debated by scholars, but I would say the following two axioms. First one is that all Medrash Chazal is rooted in a question in the text. It's always a textual problem. Whether or not it's a logical problem, whether it's something I use in the vocabulary, whether it's a syntactical or grammatical issue, or whether it's simply a gap in the text. Medrash Chazal, whatever the answer to the Medrash, the question is always very similar to the text. Of course, that's often missed. The second, and this I would say is not always, it is not the same as the surety, is that most Medrash, even the answers, are very much tied to the text. A classic example would be that of Kishna H. You know, you ask many students, which part of the story is Kishna H? And obviously the story of the Kishna H doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah. It's in the Medrash, but when you actually look at the story of the Kishna H, and there are several varieties, there are several versions of the story, the theme of fire is a recurring theme, and you can find certain hints in various circumstances, like the Hamiya, and the Tifa, and the Urtasim, and there are several other circumstances as well, that certainly hint to the answers or the solutions that the Medrash provide. So that's something always to keep in mind. So when Chazal are going to identify their own personalities, so obviously the starting question will bother by who is this person? Why, we must be able to associate it with somebody. And very often there are very minor, at least minor textual hints or connections or common words that stimulate Chazal into identifying a certain person. So taking from the classic example of Rashi Aviram, if you ask, I think most people who sort of learn Rashi and learn Chumash, so you think that Dustin and Aviram were very, very busy. They were very busy throughout, you don't know when, it's not as much focus, but I'm not even as to when the story of Korach took place. Clearly, Dustin and Aviram do not appear anywhere in the Medrash past the Korach story, because they were swallowed up by the earth. But before the Korach story, there's three or more places that Dustin and Aviram come up. They come up at least three times in this week's parsha that they're referred to, not by name. And Chazal identified it as Dustin and Aviram. You think that these guys had a very, very busy career of making parts of Moshe of it. We saw that in this week's parsha that Moshe sees two people arguing and he stand up in the din and sin, and Rashi says that Dustin and Aviram, he quotes the Medrash that any time it says meets him on Shabbat, so the two are connected. Later the parsha says, Mesu Kalfan Hashim Yamar Shimach HaShecha, instead of identifying that with the king of Egypt who had died, by Yamar Shimach HaShecha, they identify that with the plural, and that's what they were bothered by, Mesu Kalfan Hashim, which is say, Hashim is Yemi Shim. At the end of the parsha, they meet people who aren't, and when after Moshe Rabbeinu fails in the first attempt to tile and things get worse than you, you have Yitzavim Mitzvashah. Okay, which is again identified with Dustin Aviram. Why? Because the Parshas Korach with Dustin Aviram, you have different Yitzavim. So here again, and finally in Parshas Kishalach with the month, by Yosir Anashim Menu Adokir, again, Anashim is probably tied to that as well. One other note that is of interest also is that in the beginning of the Parshas, they say to Moshe, and these come probably each Sarah Bishofet Aleinu, the same language used in Parshas Korach that Dustin Aviram used, Sisparer Aleinu Dam Sisparer. So Chazal again like to do this. They see these many anonymous personalities are revealed to be the past one person, the same person or the same people. One other example, not as common, but is the existence of Oda Melech HaBashan. Oda is certainly known well in the Midrashic circles that he was the one who came to tell Avin the bad fellow. The Torah doesn't mention anything there. It just says, "Vayavol Hachalit Vayagir Avon Ha'Ivri." The simple meaning is that he escaped from that war. Where did Chazal come up with this idea that it was Od? So the fact is, in Parshas Varim, Od is described as Tidak, Od Melech HaBashan, Yishar Yeser HaRufa'im. He was left over to the last of the Rufa'im, the people who are known from other sources as well, these Rufa'im. If you actually look in the story in the form of five kings, on their way to subjugating the five kings, the four kings knocked off a bunch of people on their way, and one of them was Vayakuas Rufa'im, the Asher HaKanayim. Somebody escaped from the Rufa'im, by Yavo HaKalut, by Yavir HaHadagri, and Chazal therefore connected to Oda. The second, which I think is more common, that we're actually certainly noticing very frequently are the disappearances. A lot of them in the school I mentioned already, after they finally agree to the chinuch, the Eved takes out gifts, and he gives them Migdanos Nasan Lo Achiha Ula Ima. What happens to the father who's not there? Vayomer Achiha the Ima, Heshev Hanara Yitayyamin Olasor. So Rashi says, close that message. Another example is that of the poor. People know the message about poor, often realize that poor was stood up to the Jews and they wanted to make the Ego. And Aaron, as I'll say, Vayivan Vayara Aaron, Vayivan Mizbeach Hachanav, Vayivan Mizbeach Hachanav, Vayivan Mizbeach Hachanav. He understood from the one who had been slaughtered in front of him that if he didn't listen to the Jews and make the Ego, so they were going to kill him as well. So, where did Chazal come up with this idea? Well, because you forget, if you look at the end of Parshas Kitavos, you look at the way he goes up for the 40 days, he says, "You may Aaron Bachurim Bachem." I'm leaving Aaron and Pur. Now, we don't, at least from the Torah, we don't really know who Pur is. A different medrash identifies Pur as being Miriam's son. But that's Aaron and Pur. Moshe comes down, Aaron is the one who built the Ego, and Moshe says to Aaron, "Vayomer Moshe Aaron, Ne'osal Lechoh HaMazeh." What did they do to you? Pur is nowhere to be found. And I'll say that Pur had to have gone somewhere, and that's how they explain the disappearance of Pur. Finally, in this week's parsha, at the end, Moshe Rabbeinu is told to go with Aaron to gather the Israelite trial. He gives them a message, and it would seem that they're supposed to go with the Zakenim to go to Paro and tell him, "Let my people go." And then, what you find is everybody's happy to hear Moshe's message. And then, after that, you find Vayavo Moshe Aaron El Paro. What happened to the Zakenim? They disappeared. The Rashi says that the Zakenim, they were very happy to hear Moshe Rabbeinu's declaration of the following. So then, when they came to going to Paro, they got a little bit, they got cold feet. So one by one, they started to slip away, and they began to disappear. And then, by the time Moshe Aaron got to Paro, well, it was just Moshe and Aaron going to be Paro. The Rashi says there that about the fear and mission to Akharefa, the Akhar Moshe and Aaron, and the mission to Kubon, Kodesh should be in the classroom, the whole of the buildings, the palace, the king, the Yogul Amechas, and the Sinai Nikolai, and the king from Minor Hashina, and they were allowed to go up a certain distance, and that's when they put themselves upon Hashem, the Nidash, the son of Abel, the king of Yogul. So Moshe was the only one who was allowed to really come close, but the Zakenim, they were kept in the background as punishment for this. And again, you have the disappearing thing. You have something identical also to this, very similar practice by Yitzchak, Esav 400 people. When you have Esav come to 400 people to scare Yaakov, you get to the end of the parasha when it's time to part ways, by Yashav, Esav, by Yom HaHu, about to say Yira. That day Esav is come to say it. What happens is more than that. But I'll say that after the encounter with Yaakov, the 400 men, got a sense of what was right and what was wrong, they slipped away, and they were rewarded in Shlomo Melech's time when he was fighting against Edom. We had wiped out a whole group of some of y'all that I remember, and 400 Arim were seen all out of the state. 400 people, and Chazal, of course, believed that these 400, that these would be the reward of the 400 people who did the prophesying when it came to Asia. Anyway, these are two examples of this, of how Chazal, the general Agadic agenda is intended to try to reveal that which is supposed to conceal, but it has the anonymity of certain identities in the Torah, so Chazal basically, just as Jason wants to put the port of Aki, Chazal did as well, and that's why you find certain commentaries and measures of trying to uncover these people.
Ah,
sorry. Yes.